שבוע טוב ומבורך, ברוכים הנמצאים. We are continuing בעזרת השם our study of the ספר תהילים of דוד המלך עליו השלום, זכותו יגן עלינו, אמן. I've said many times that the benefits of studying תהילים are at least twofold. Number one, we're studying it on Motzei Shabbat, and as we know, all the Seudot of Shabbat correspond another tzaddik. The Seuda of the night represents Yitzhak Avinu, the Seuda of Shabbat morning represents Avraham Avinu, and the Seuda Shlishit, of course, represents Yaakov Avinu. Motzei Shabbat is David HaMelech. It's called Seudat, the David Malka Meshicha. So it's quite appropriate on Motzei Shabbatot to spend time, as that's David's aura is manifesting itself in the air. His neshama is being called upon every Motzei Shabbat, so therefore it's appropriate for us to study from his works. Secondly, for the past almost decade, we've spent learning Navi on Motzei Shabbatot. And the book of Tehillim is actually a review of Sefer Shemuel, because all the episodes that we read, and Melachim I should say, the stories that we read about David HaMelech in Sefer Shemuel are repeated through the eyes of the Tehillim, as David HaMelech prayed during different episodes of his life. So you get to review what the episode was and exactly you know what happened. So it also serves for us a purpose of Hazara for our Navi that we studied. Tonight we are studying Perek Nun Zayin. There is a method to this madness why we pick certain Perakim in certain weeks. This week's we're reading the Parashat Hayesara. So the Haftarah of this week alludes to this episode, so therefore it's timely according to our weekly Haftarah, to give us the backdrop of this chapter. David HaMelech, as you know, did not have an easy life. David HaMelech, amongst all his other tribulations, he was pursued by the king of Israel. Shaul HaMelech, for whatever reason, felt that David is trying to usurp his throne, that he's rebellious, that he deserves to die. And the next three chapters are referred to the chapters of Al Tashhet. Please God, don't destroy. You'll see Nun Zayin, Nun Het, and Nun Tet all open up with Lam Naseyach Al Tashhet, where David HaMelech is making a plea to God Almighty, please don't destroy me and deliver me to the hands of Shaul HaMelech. He's also praying that he himself should not become corrupted morally by what's taking place, which means if Shaul has lowered himself morally to go kill an innocent man, David, so David does not want to become corrupted himself now to take a revenge and kill Shaul. This was a one-sided argument. David had no gripe with Shaul HaMelech. This was all in Shaul's mind that David is against him. So David is saying, number one, Al Tashhet, Shaul shouldn't destroy me. But number two, I shouldn't become destroyed from the episode, which I shouldn't become hardened or more cruel and do the wrong thing as a result of this innocent attack on me. The backdrop of this specific chapter is the story where there were fellows living in the Ziphim area, and the men of Ziphim came to Shaul and they told him David is hiding out in some caves. So they ratted David out to Shaul. They gave him his location. They said, you know, he's somewhere over there in the caves over there, and you can get him. So you see, we're dealing with Ba'alei Lashon Hara. Those people should not have added fuel to the fire. They shouldn't have went to Shaul and riled them up and given him his precise location where David was hiding. Shaul accepted it, and he mustered up an army of 3,000 men. And they went into the caves of En Gedi. Anybody ever went to the En Gedi region? It's a fantastic historical region. Now, the tour guides usually point out the waterfalls and the dates and all the other interesting things, the ibexes that are, you know, walking around. But very important to know that this was a major historical event, the famous episode of David and Shaul, when David was hiding in the caves of En Gedi and Shaul came with an army of men with one intent: find David and kill him, and take no survivors. So the story goes that David obviously was putting his faith in God, as we'll see in the chapter. And what happens is, in the interim, Shaul has to relieve himself. Let's go to the bathroom. So he goes into one of the caves to relieve himself. Happens to be, it's the exact cave where David is. So now, who's in danger? Now Shaul's in danger. It reversed, because Shaul has no idea that David is there. David has a chance to ambush him, kill him, and if he does it, he's right, based on the Jewish law that says, Habal horgecha ashkem behorgo. Shaul has a law of a rodef. He's trying to kill an innocent man. David can use the law to his advantage in this case over here. Not to his advantage, the law is the law. He could use the law. And he's able to make an offensive attack against Shaul. He does not. Shaul, it seems, when he was relieving himself, took off his coat and put it on the side. David HaMelech goes and cuts a piece of the coat. Later, to show Shaul, I was in the same cave as you, I could have killed you. Look at your garment. Shaul looks at his garment. Hey, it's missing a corner. Who took the corner off? David takes it out of his pocket. Here's the missing corner, which means I had you in my clutches and I let you go. I wasn't intending to kill you. That wasn't my intent. If I wanted to, I could have killed you without any question. I'm innocent and all that. Shaul HaMelech hears this, and Shaul HaMelech is filled with remorse. And he says, I'm sorry, you're right, you are innocent, you are a good man. And then he confesses to David, and he tells him, you're going to be the next king of Israel. The first time he confesses that fact, or that he admits to that fact. He says, I got a sign from Shmuel. When Shmuel told Shaul that he's going to lose his kingdom as a result of bringing back the animals from Amalek, he was supposed to kill all the animals, so he says to Shmuel, tells David, he ripped a piece of Shmuel's garment, and he said, just like your garment is ripped, so too God is going to rip your kingdom. So what Shmuel was telling Shaul was, the one that's going to come and rip your garment, know that that's the one that's going to become the next king of Israel. So he told David, this is it, this is already Nasib, this is from the Hashemayim, you're the next king of Israel, and I'm Mochel you. Avner ben Ner, the story doesn't end, Avner ben Ner was David's, Shmuel's general. He didn't accept the story. He went to Shaul and said, you don't believe David. He didn't kill you because he was scared to kill you. He knew that if he'd lay a finger on you, there's 3,000 soldiers that are coming, they're going to devour him alive. So therefore, he's just setting you up. He wants to make believe he's your friend. So show some more. But he had the corner of my garment. He says, very simple. You were walking in the fields over there. Could be the corner of your garment latched onto some of the bushes. So he was walking in the field. He saw the corner of your garment in the bushes. So he picked it up. He made a whole story. And he said, I ripped it off. I was in the same cave as you. He says, you think he was in the same cave as you? It's a story. He's manipulating you. Okay, so he worked on Shaul again to keep the animosity going. In any event, we go back to our chapter. So chapter Nun Zayin is actually a Hazara of the story of David and Shaul, David and Shaul in the Me'ara. Shaul. Pasuk. Lam nasayah al tashhet le David mikhtam. In our first class, we discussed there's different styles of song. that David HaMelech wrote. This is more for the composer. Lam Naseyah, David is telling the conductor. You know, when he's playing the music for this Tehillim over here, you're playing it, this is going to be the Mechtam style of, you know, of song. Beborcho mepene Shaul b'me'ara. When he was running away from Shaul in the Me'ara. Now, you see over here that David was a tremendous anav, he was tremendously humble. His men were telling him, David, this is your chance to kill Shaul. And David was talking his own men out of doing what he was halachically right to do. So, the Pasuk writes, Biborcho mepene Shaul, when he was running away from Shaul in the Me'ara. Hold it. He wasn't running away from Shaul in the Me'ara. If anything, Shaul was on the defense in the Me'ara, not knowing it. Which means, in the cave itself, David was not being pursued. On the contrary, David had a chance to be the pursuer. So the Pasuk indicates a very strong character of David HaMelech. Biporcho mepnei Shaul. He made himself as he was being the one of the pursued, being pursued, even when he was in the Me'ara. Even when Shaul's life was in danger, and not his. He gave the kavod to Shaul. He's the king of Israel. And definitely did not let himself, do that. Biborcho mepnei Shaul b'me'ara. There's a midrash. The midrash tells us, centuries earlier, there was another fellow that was in a cave that was saved. Lot. Remember when God was destroying Sodom? So Lot got saved after the Sodom was destroyed. He went into a cave with his daughters. That's where he lived. So the Midrash writes, God saved Lot in the cave. Why? Because it was destined to come out of Lot, Moab. From Moab is going to come Ruth. And from Ruth is going to come David HaMelech. So David HaMelech tells God, you saved my ancestor in the cave on account of me. Now I'm in the cave, so save me on account of myself. If you saved Lot for me, then Kal Vachomer, save me for me. That was David's plea to Borei Olam. And if Al Tashchet, don't destroy me, save me. It is amazing that under such circumstances, David always resorts to prayer. You're being in a cave, you know, there's 3,000 hungry wolves outside, the one that ravenously eat you up. Who has kavanah? Who has you're going to pray now? Go pray mincha. You know, you're too scared to pray sometimes. Sometimes, as much as you need the prayer, you're too nervous to pray. You just don't have the... But David HaMelech, it says, he kept his equilibrium throughout all situations. And not only does he pray, but I mean, he authors, I mean, one of the most wonderful chapters of Tehillim. So he says, Choneni Elohim Choneni. God, favor me. Favor me, O God, favor me. He's asking a double request. Number one, he's saying, save me from the physical destruction. Choneni, save me from the physical destruction of Shaul and the moral destruction. Don't let this episode of me being chased by Shaul cause me to be vengeful, cause me to have animosity. I don't want to become hardened because of this situation. Hence, Choneni Hashem, Choneni. Others explain that she says a double request is, cause me not to kill others, and Choneni that I shouldn't be killed. He doesn't want to kill innocent people, and he doesn't want to be killed himself, hence the double language. Ki becha chasaya nafshi. Because I've always sought to protect myself through you. And David HaMelech says, I don't turn to violence, I don't use my armies. You're my protection. Upsel kenafecha echese. Which means, even though I'm in the caves, and the caves are dark, and the caves are secluded, and the caves are remote, David HaMelech says, I know, even in such a remote area, Upsel kenafecha echese, I am in the shadow of your wings, that's where I'm taking refuge. Which means, David HaMelech is saying, even though now I have a chance to kill Shaul, I'm not going to exploit the chance to kill him, I'm going to show that I'm putting my faith in Borei Olam. Which is, I have a chance to finish the subject, it's over. But Ubsir Kinafecha Ihase. I'm going to show you, Borei Olam, that I'm going to trust you under your wings that you're going to protect me. Ad Ya'avod Havot. Until the treachery passes. Meaning, until Shaul realizes that I'm not committing treachery. Ad Ya'avod, until the Havot passes through Shaul's heart. Until I can get him to finally understand that it's a one-way argument over it. There's nothing that I have against him. Ikra l'Elohim Elyon, la'el gomer alay. So, David HaMelech says, I'm really hopeless over here. Why? Because if a person's ever in trouble, so he goes to the authorities. There's always somebody that's an authority you can go to. But when the king is going against you, who do you go? There's nobody higher than the king. He's the authority. So David HaMelech says, yeah, but there's an authority to the authority. That's God. So he says, I'm going to the Supreme Court justice. I'm going to Bora. Ikra l'Elohim Elyon. God, I'm coming to you because you're Elyon. You're also a king. And your kingship is higher than Shaul. So therefore, I have to go to the top. I have to go to somebody that's above. La'el gomer alay. To the God who fulfills for me. Which means as follows. David is saying like this. A person feels that he's in trouble. So he has to take the law into his own hands. And he feels that he's doing everything. He's protecting himself. And he has to commit the violence. And he has to commit the act to save himself. And it's all him. These are people that believe that all of the fate of man is dependent on a person's own prowess, a person's own effort. The meaning is, I know differently. I know that the way it works is, La'el gomer alai. God only asks a man to take the first step. God only asks a man to make an effort, to show a certain direction, and then Borei Olam is Gomer. Then already Borei Olam, he finishes it. Which means all our success is not us. We just show God that we have an interest. And then La'el Gomer Alay. The rest is Si'ata Dishmaya. It's a very important lesson to know in anything we do. Even in our spiritual endeavors. It's always La'el Gomer Alay. We have free will to decide whether we want to do the mitzvah or not. But we do not have free will to succeed at doing the mitzvah. You know, I could have the best intentions and decide tomorrow morning I want to go to Bet Knesset. That's free will. That God does not have control of my free will. Once I decide I want to go to Bet Knesset, whether I'm going to get there or not, that's already back up to God. I don't have free will to get to the Bet Knesset. Something could happen on the way. I could go on the way that the street is blocked, the car gets a flat tire, somebody calls me to come back home. I don't have the zechut. The will I had. The execution, I don't have. That's always Ikra l'Elohim Elyon la'el gomer alay. The fruition part of it, the success, I can open up a store. I can load the store with merchandise. I can open up the right hours. I can have the right price. The customers can walk in the store. But at the end of the day, am I going to succeed in making sales and making business? La'el gomer alay. Always know that at the end of the day, it's not us. The success is always attributed to Borei Olam. So that's what David HaMelech is saying. Borei Olam, I know, listen, I know I have to make an effort to protect myself, but my ultimate salvation is not going to be for my own defense. It's going to be La'el gomer alay. The rabbi is giving mashal. You know about the space shuttle. So the space shuttle is thrusted into the solar system. Hundreds of thousands of miles away to get to the moon. Now, did you ever ask yourself a question? How much fuel do you think you need to get this spaceship, which is tens of thousands of pounds? I don't know how many tons the space shuttle, but it's a big spaceship. It's bigger than an airplane, obviously. How much fuel does it need? You'd need fuel miles and miles of square miles of fuel. Impossible to fit all that fuel in the fuselage of a space shuttle. So how does it work? The explanation is they really don't need that much fuel. All they need is enough fuel is to get them out of the atmosphere. Once they get it out of the atmosphere and there's no more gravity, so then already the shuttle propels itself. With the thrust that it has, it keeps on traveling the same exact speed because there's no resistance, because there's no gravity. So that you don't really need that much. That's exactly the same point in life. Which means, Borei Olam asks us to take the first step. After you take the first step, then already God takes over from that point, and therefore the success is met following that. Yishlach meshamayim v'yoshi'eni. Please God, dispatch from the heavens and save me. David HaMelech knew he was in danger. There's an army of 3,000 men that are trying to kill him. So he says, "Your God, you also have armies. You have the army of angels. So yishlach mishamayim, dispatch from the heavens, v'yoshi'eni, heref shu'afi, from the disgrace of those that try to swallow me," which is the men of Shaul. Yishlach Elohim hazdo v'amito. The Sephorno explains, I need two things here. I need hazdo and amito. Hesed is kindness. Emet is justice. I need chesed, because I didn't do anything wrong. But I'm asking, do chesed for me, va'amito, and be strict with the ones that are trying to kill me. Nafshi betoch leba'im. My soul is amongst lions. There's two interpretations over here. The lions, whenever we talk about lions, we refer to great men of Torah. David is giving a compliment over here. He's saying, listen, my battle is up. The men that are coming against me are not warriors, people in battle. They're great tzaddikim. They're lions. Leva'im. Shaul HaMelech, Avner ben Ner, Amasa ben Yeter. All these people over here were great men, and therefore he says, God, please save me from the lions. The Radak, well, actually the Al-Sheikh, explains the ill different. He says, no, save me from the lions, from my own men. Because David's own men were coercing him. Kill him! Now's your chance! You're going to squander this opportunity. So David says, please God, save me that I don't succumb to the lions. And there's a diuk we can make for the Al-Sheikh. Nafshim betoch, the word betoch. You see, if he's talking about the 3,000 men of Shaul, he's not betoch. They're pursuing him, but he's amongst his own men. Therefore, he's saying, "Save me from the pursuit of my own men." Eshkeva lohatim, lohet. What word lohet in Hebrew means? It's like a burning fire. Save me, or not save me. Eshkeva, I lie with fiery men. A person that speaks Lashon Hara, the rabbis say that it's like their mouths are on fire. Just like a fire destroys. You know, all you need is to have... We all saw what happened in California recently. You know, with a little fire that cannot be contained, and you have embers that are flying all over the place, and a little ember will land on a piece of dry wood, and then already in a matter of minutes, the whole thing is consumed. A person that speaks Lashon Hara, his tongue is like those fiery embers. You know, he spews Lashon Hara, and that fire catches on to different places, and it just spreads like wildfire. Hence the saying, like wildfire. The men of Zifim, David HaMelech says, these men over here with their fiery mouths, they got me into this mess over here. They're the ones that told Shaul, David's in Engedi, go after him. So I'm fighting against now the fire of the mouths of these informers that told on me. Bnei Adam, these people, shinehem, that their teeth, chanit v'hisim, are like spears and arrows. David HaMelech tells us a lesson on the nature of those that speak Lashon Hara. Lashon Hara is not dead on arrival. It doesn't have a limited effect. It's like a spear or an arrow where you can damage somebody from far. You don't only damage close proximity, you can even far damage somebody from distance. Person has an arrow, he shoots the arrow, the arrow goes 100 feet. He's able to stand here and 100 feet away, he's able to cause some damage. The same thing, a person's tongue is like a Hanit v'itzim is like a spear and an arrow that has long-term damage. A person speaks something on the telephone in New York, but his voice travels, and the voice can travel to a distant place. And then the world is already your words traveled over the Atlantic Ocean. They're already in a different country. They're talking to Lashon Hara. Like an arrow, and all of a sudden, very quickly, the words travel very fast today with the technology. So it says, these people over here, they didn't realize that their mouths have long-range missiles. You know, it has a long-range effect. Ulshonam Herev Hadda. Their tongue is like a sharp sword. They don't realize that with their tongue, they're able to kill people. It's like the sword is the weapon of destruction. Yeah, with their word, they're endangering the life of an innocent man. Ulshonam Herev Hadda. Ruma al shamayim Elohim, al kol haaretz kevodecha. Ruma is larum. Larum is to rise up. Borei olam, David HaMelech says, these men don't deserve that you be in their midst. They don't deserve to have the divine presence with them. Ruma al shamayim Elohim. Go, your presence is better to be in the Shamayim, not amongst this group over here. Al kol ha'aretz kevodecha. Let your presence be al kol ha'aretz, above the aretz, but not now them. He's asking that take away the divine supervision from these people. Again, it's another sign that David HaMelech understands that the only way they can kill him is if God is with them. Borei Olam gives them a chance to do it. So David HaMelech goes after the source. David HaMelech says, God, don't stay with them. Go back up to the heavens where it's more suitable for you. And therefore automatically the plan of the enemies will be foiled. Reshet echinu lefa'amai. They prepared a snare for my footsteps. Kafaf nafshi. They tried to bend my soul, which means they sent messengers. There was a search warrant for David HaMelech. They sent messengers to all the cities. They put his picture up. Wanted dead or alive. Could you imagine how... It's amazing. You can't imagine David HaMelech had to endure such a thing. He was a wanted man for doing... for being innocent, for doing nothing wrong. So David HaMelech says, they tried to bend my soul. They tried to collapse me. They tried to crush me. They tried to prepare traps for me, putting warrants for my arrest across all the cities of Israel. Karu lefanai shiha. They dug a hole. They dug a pit before me. But you know what happened? Nafilu betocha. They ended up falling into the pit. What is he referring to over here? He's referring to over here is where we read David HaMelech was told by Shaul that he has to go into Philistine territory and he has to come back with 100 foreskins, 100 aralot. Not an easy thing to do. David HaMelech has to risk his life. Shaul's figuring he's never going to come back with 100 aralot of the Philistine. He put a pit in front of David HaMelech, knowing that he's going to fall into the pit. Sure enough, David HaMelech comes back, and he succeeds. He had Shata Nishmaya. Only later on, who ended up falling by the hands of the Pilishtim? Shaul HaMelech. The same pit that you dug in order to drown me, at the end of the day, Shaul HaMelech got defeated by the Pilishtim themselves. So this first part of the chapter over here is talking about David's plea. Save me from this situation. Save me physically. Save me morally. Good. The rest of the chapter, which will conclude when we read it inside immediately, talks about David's belief and faith that he's going to be saved. First of all, he's praying to God in desperation. And the rest of the chapter is David HaMelech saying, I have faith, I know I'm going to succeed, I know you're not going to let me down, it's all upbeat. He ends up on a high note. But before we go further, it's kedai to study this episode a little deeper. David HaMelech rips the clothes of Shaul. But this the Gemara says, Gemara Berachot Samech Bet Amud Bet, Amar Bi Yosef Bi Hanina, Kola Bevazet HaBegadim, Sof Enu Nehene Mehem, Shneemar VeHamelech David Zaken Ba BeYamim, VeYichusu BeBegadim, VeLo Yihamlo. Today's after. Well, it's not a coincidence. I picked this perek because it's today's after. Sometimes it works out that way, and sometimes I orchestrate it. Tonight was orchestrated. David HaMelech, at the end of his life, as we read today, it says became cold. Sometimes it happens to old men; he gets cold. So vechasu bebegadim. So how do you warm up an old man? Yeah, you put some blankets over him, and usually it does the job. But the pasuk says velo yihamlo. They didn't heat him. They didn't work. That's strange. What do you mean they didn't work? V'lo yihamlo. The nature of a garment has a property to heat. So you see over there is a side point. Garments have the property to heat only because God gives it the property to heat. You could explain it scientifically, but if God does not want the garment to heat, you could put 100 garments on the person and he's still going to be cold. So God is able to take away that power. So the question to give us, why did God not allow the garments to eat? Why did he take away those properties? Oh, because you have a rule. Klal gadol b'Torah, kol ha-mebazeh et ha-begadim, enu nehenem in ha-begadim. The one that treats the garments derogatorily, you mistreat the garments, you're not going to benefit from the garments. When did David HaMelech mistreat the garments? He ripped Shaul's garment. So that means you showed lack of respect for the garment? So it's a cloud. If you don't show respect to an item, you don't show gratitude to an item, clothes are an important thing, clothes are a gift from God, clothes warm a person up, clothes are a beracha. So if you want the beracha to stay by you, you have to show God you appreciate it. Once you show some disdain to the item, that's the biggest way where the beracha stops. Now the beracha of the garment will not be benefiting you. It's a klal gadol in hakarat tov. You appreciate, the beracha comes to you. You don't appreciate, the beracha is taken away to you. It's like the Gemara says in a different place, that God forbid, if a person is not careful and he has pirurim, small pieces of bread, and he mistreats them, he throws the pirurim on the floor. The Gemara says, kashel aniyut. What do you mean kashel aniyut? Why is a person become poor? God gave you bread. So that's little crumbs. Oh, so you're mistreating the crumbs? And God says, you don't have gratitude even on the crumbs. The crumbs is also from God. So you don't have a karat atof to that? God says, good, you're not going to have any crumbs. You're not going to have anything. Forget about crumbs. That's all you're going to have is crumbs. Kashel aniyut. The Torah says, for example, when Adam Rishon was in Gan Eden, the Pasuk says, Vechosia hasadeh, terem yehye ba'aris, Vechol esev hasadeh terem yismach, Ve'adam ayin. God created the ground. But until Adam and Rishon was created, nothing sprouted from the ground. The grass wasn't growing. There was no vegetation. So then she says, why? So he says, the Adam ayin. Because Adam wasn't created yet. What do you mean? And when Adam is created, now already you can have vegetation. And then she says, yes, you know why? Because until Adam was created, nobody appreciated the necessity of rain. Who's going to appreciate the rain? Who cares if the rain's or not? Once Adam was born, he says, wow, rain is an item. You need rain. Without rain, you don't have grass. So God says you needed somebody to appreciate it. Oh, now there's somebody that appreciates it? Now it's the rain. So you see, beracha is talui on the credence that you give to the item. You give credence to an item, God maintains that item. It's a lesson of life, Rabotai. Person has to appreciate his wife. Person appreciates his wife, what Eolam says, okay, his wife will be around for 100 years. Why? You appreciate. Person doesn't appreciate the blessings. God says, okay, you don't appreciate bread? You throw bread away. Yeah. You don't appreciate the garment? You rip garments? Yeah, you're not going to have garments. So the maintenance of all the things we have in life is, you recognize us from Hashem, you recognize us from Borei Olam, you treat it with the proper kavod. So he ripped the garment, so he loses. Now, to understand this episode over here a little deeper, you're not going to find the more Lashem Shamayim ripping of a garment than David HaMelech. Based on the introduction I gave you, you have to know the rest of the story. God, he ripped the garment, but that's not the main part of the story. He didn't kill him. He overcame his natural tendency, which is really the story should have been, he took a dagger and stuck it in Shaul's heart. So when you look at it, what the alternative was, sorry, ripping the garment was phenomenal. It's an act of heroism, heroism. That he could do such a thing. That's a nobility of character. That he was able to overcome. And all his men were telling him, you're making a mistake, David, kill him. Didn't David HaMelech pray in the chapter, save me from the lions? They want me to kill him. I don't want to kill him. Al tashchet, I don't want to become morally corrupt. He was fighting a tremendous yetzer of midot over here. Not to kill Saul because he had respect for the kingdom. And he had so much faith in God, which means the fact that he didn't kill him shows, Bechah Hasiti, I'm trusting you, God. La'il Gomer, you're going to finish this for me. I don't have to resort to violence. And still what? You ripped the garment, but. What should he have done? Leave a note, I was here. I don't know what should he have done. There could have been another option that he could have taken another memento from Shaul. Take a shoelace and give it back. You didn't destroy anything. I'm going further. The Pasuk writes, after the episode is over, David comes to Shaul and he's trying to tell him, now you see, you misread me and I don't have any ill feelings, right? The pasuk says like this: "Vayomer David to Shaul, lama tishma'a divrei adam nemor." What are you listening to? The rumors, Shaul. He near David mevakesh ra'atecha. David's looking to harm you. He near yom azirau einecha. You saw with your own eyes today. Hashem netanecha. Hashem ayom biyadi b'me'ara. You were in my hands in the cave. Ve'amar lehorgecha. There was a thought to kill you. Vatahos alecha. Listen closely. Listen to the language, Rabotai. Vatahos alecha. You had mercy on yourself. Is this the right language? The pasuk should say, Vehasiti alecha. I had mercy on you. What do you mean, Vatahos? You had mercy on you? How did Shaul have mercy on himself? It's the Gemara's question, Berachot. Mim Vatahos. It should say, Vehasiti. So the Gemara says, Amar bir azar, Amar lo David le Shaul, Mena Torah ben hariga ata, Share rodef ata, Va Torah amra ba leorgecha ashkem leorgo, Erav sni'ut shaita becha, Hi hasa alecha. Your modesty, Shaul, that saved your life. The Gemara says, Maid sini'ut. What was the sini'ut? So it says, during the pursuit, Shaul had to relieve himself. No person has to relieve himself. You're in the middle of a field, so what do? I mean, that's what fields are for, you would say. Shaul says, no, it's not modest to go in the middle of a field. So he went into the cave. That's what he was doing in the cave. He went into the cave to reveal himself because of modesty. And in the cave, it says, he put a wall around himself. He went in a me'ara betoch me'ara, sukkah betoch sukkah, me'itza betoch me'itza. He made all sorts of coverings and coverings and coverings and coverings so nobody should see the sinyut. So David HaMelech says, you saved yourself. That sinyut that you had today when you were in the cave, I saw you relieved yourself with such a modesty. That saved you. What are you talking about? What does it mean, that saved you? What saved him is David's good spirit, good heart. That's what really saved him. He should have said, I saved him. You saved yourself, Shaul. So there's an explanation I heard in the name of Rabbi Moshe Tukachinsky. He said as follows. It was Shaul's modesty that saved him. Because David HaMelech was analyzing. Why is Shaul have such animosity against me? What does he want from me? So David worked it out methodically. It could be one of two reasons. He either wants to knock me off because he's just flat out jealous. Which that's the way it seemed. He's jealous. He has an obsession. There's guys Lashon Harayim all over the place about me. And he's worried about his job. I'm going to take his position. He can't get over that fact. And he's jealous. Or, I could look at it in a better way. What's the better way of looking at it? He's the king of Israel. And he looks at me as a threat. Or more, not as a threat. He looks at me as a rebel. And the law is that a mored b'malchut is hayav mita. So Shaul's looking at it through his halachic eyes, not his jealous eyes. Hey, listen. He has indication for whatever he has, but the indication to Shaul is David is a threat, a halachic threat to the kingdom, meaning he's a moren b'malchut, he's not accepting my sovereignty. And Harambam writes in Halacha that the king is able to kill a moren, and he should kill the mordim. Because the Torah says, Som tasim alecha melech, shete'imato alecha. The king has an obligation to establish his throne that they should fear him. So it's not proper for kings just to say, oh, don't worry about it. You can rebel against me, spit in my face, curse me out, and don't worry about it. No, you don't do that. Because then already you're cheapening the whole kingship. Yeah? So David's saying, could be Zashem Shamayim over here. It's possible. What's the nafkamina? So David's working it out in his mind. You know what nafkamina is? If he's jealous, you can't explain anything to him. The jealous man doesn't think rationally. Now go try to explain to somebody that has an envious rage and he's consumed by kinah. You can't explain it to him. I really like you. I'm not against you. I'm your friend. And the kinah is burning and raging in a person. There's no logic. As we said many times, kinah it's an irrational midah. I told you once, as a side point, I was sitting at a funeral once. You talk about kinah, people act irrationally. So there's a guy sitting next to me. So the rabbi's talking about the deceased, you know, all his qualities and all the good things he did in his life and all the positive things. So the guy next to me says, well, look at all the kavod this guy's getting. He said, you want this kavod? He's in a box. This is the kavod you want to get over here. So you see, when a guy's jealous, you don't talk. You say things illogically. Kavod, is he jealous of this guy? Is because they say a couple of praises about him. So you see, so if that's the case, there's only one option. You got to kill Shaul. Because explaining it to him, it's going to repeat. But if it's coming from halachic angle, we could talk. If it's driven by religious motives, okay, so I can explain to listen, the David, Shaul, that's not the case. It's not the deen, I'm not a mored, I love you, I'm with you, I could have killed you. You got to show it to him. You got to show prove that you're not against him. Oh, you're not a mored, okay, halacha, mutar. But you have to now figure out motivation. So how does David figure out motivation? It came to him on a silver platter. He's in the cave, hiding out from Shaul. Who walks into the cave? Shaul. Little does Shaul know that he's being watched by David. And David sees over here the most modest man he ever saw. What is Shaul doing in the cave? Came to relieve himself, but it was a cave within a cave. And then he built a wall around the wall. What are you doing? Nobody's around. But Shaul lived under the principle of Shiviti Adonai L'Negdi Tamid. God is watching, and God is in the cave, and he's in the cave within the cave, And therefore, whatever he did, afidu bechadre chadarim, even in the rooms of rooms, he understood God is watching. And that was Shaul's motivation of every action. Only somebody that's living with the recognition and the realization that God is in front of him every second in every place would act in such a way. What are you being so modest for? Who's around? It's dark. Nobody can see you. But God sees you. Therefore, so that he was able to see a master in front of his eyes that lived with the realization that God is in front of him at all moments. At that point, David HaMelech says, this man can only be driven by halachic motives. Because if even when he goes to the bathroom, he has shiviti Hashem and negdi tamid to be so modest, every decision he's going to make, certainly when he's in public, in the wide open, certainly he's going to think, what does God want? God is watching me. God knows. What. So he says, David HaMelech, Vatachos Alecha, you had mercy on yourself. Your actions indicated to me that you are a pious man. Therefore I said, you know what, I don't have to kill you. I can talk it out with you and you'll understand. So I cut your garment to bring it to you, to show you what I could have done to you. And the Pasuk says that when Shaul heard the story, Vayomer el David, Tzadik ata mimeni, you are more righteous than even I am. Ki ata gemaltani atova, you just paid me in kindness, ve'ani gemalticha hara'a, and I only did bad to you. Ve'ata, hine yada'ti ki maloch timloch, then he gave him the secret. I'm telling you, you're going to be the next king of Israel. He told him, you're the one that ripped the garment. I was waiting for this day. So you see from the story a lot of things. Number one, look at David HaMelech's tzidkut over here, how he dealt with Shaul. He respected Shaul. He ripped the garment in order to save Shaul's life. He gave him the benefit of the doubt. The ripping of the garment was already preordained. Shaul knew about it. He was waiting for this day. And still what? You shouldn't have ripped the garment. Aye, but David, you did so great. Yeah, 100%. For the great part of it, of breaking your character and not becoming morally corrupt. Al tashchet. We spent the whole night tonight talking about the greatness of David HaMelech. That's your reward, David. You're going to be the role model for what does it mean to overcome, a weakness. But at the end of the day, you rip the garment. Look at sometimes you say to yourself, it doesn't pay to be a tzaddik. Before you tzaddikim over here tonight in the crowd, you're wondering, is it worth it to be a tzaddik? Or a tzaddiket for that matter? And I say it is worth it. Not that I would know, but it's worth it from what they say, what they tell me. But you say, look how strict you judge. Fine tooth comb over here. You ripped the garment, you showed a little disrespect, you could have done it, everything was perfect, you're 99.9% the hero, but you shouldn't have ripped the garment. Like I said, you should have left him a postcard, I was here. And then already you could have done it in a different way. And especially according to the Midrash, it says he ripped the garment, and now Shaul's beged became patur from tzitzit. So that already makes it a little more palatable. So you took away not only a corner of his garment, you took away his mitzvah from the wearing the sisiyot. Still, David HaMelech many years later was punished as a result of it. And that's the lesson of Hakarat HaTov, which is even if you're purely motivated, even if you have the right intention, but if you mistreat any of the gifts of God, what do I tell you this? Simple mashal. There are different times a year where we do spring cleaning. We don't only do spring cleaning in the spring in our homes. We do spring cleaning every month. We have a spring cleaning where we snake out all our old possessions and garments and stuff like that. According to what we're saying tonight, a person has an old suit. You don't take it and throw it in the garbage. What do you do with it? You give it to somebody else. You give it to somebody that's less fortunate. According to what we're saying tonight, you don't make a wedding and you have hundreds of pounds of food that are left over and have the caterer just take all the food, throw in the garbage the next day. What's going on? This is the gift of God. What, you just wantonly just waste? You don't waste. You don't waste. Unfortunately, in America, we get so used to disposable. Everything's disposable. Everything, you use it once, throw in the garbage, get a different one. And our grandparents were not like that. You know, the grandparents were very careful, you know, to conserve. They were very, you know, you would take a cup, a plastic cup, and say, hey, put on, use it again. One sip, throw it out, take another cup. They understood this is just waste things, but I'm the baltashit. What happened to just, you know, wasting things, for taking things for granted? The Gemara goes even so far to say, when they used to break the glass at the weddings, ay, Benish Chais is baltashit, you're breaking a glass. Even when you had a purpose, so yes, to come and answer, no, I was talking about they used to break a glass that was broken already, so it was, they weren't wasting anything. But they have to answer up. And in our generation, garbage, throw it away, throw it away, throw it away. When God sees already that we're so callous, or careless, the word is, with the things that we have, we don't show any importance to them. God says, you know, million and one things. Then already the shefa, chas v'shalom, stops. So we have to be a little more careful. And maybe that's why David HaMelech, he opens the chapter. Maybe the chapters, the next three chapters, which we call them the chapters of Al Tashchet, maybe David HaMelech is self-chastising himself. Maybe David HaMelech is giving himself a self-rebuke. Lam Naseyah, to the conductor, David HaMelech says, I learned my lesson. Al Tashchet le David Mechtam. He's rebuking himself. He says, yeah, I did a great thing. I put faith in God. I trusted Borei Olam and all that. But David's talking to himself. You blew it. You ripped his garment. David HaMelech is saying, remember the lesson. Al tashchet. Don't destroy. Don't waste. The person has to be careful when it comes to these things over here of Bal tashchet. It's not, and you have to teach that to your children as well. The children don't understand that. They think the father's being cheap. It's a little bit cheap. You have to teach that Yaakov Avinu went back to Pachim Ketanim. Yaakov Avinu was a rich man. He forgot some earthenware jugs over the Yavok crossing. So what do? If you say, it's like you forgot a cup, a plastic cup. So you went to New Jersey. I'm gonna go back. We go back for it. I left three Dixie cups. You go back for that. So he says sheep. You say no. I mean this is it's a gift from God. So when you look at your possessions as a gift from God, so you. They say, I think they said it at the Hazonich's funeral. I don't know if they said it at the funeral, but it's been said that his wife said about the Hazonich, which is your site, was just last week. And I'm going to explain to you the compliment here. He had the same overcoat from when we were married till the day he died. Hazonich. What does it mean, the same overcoat? I'll tell you what the pshat is. He was careful with his possessions. For an overcoat to last, I don't know, 50 years, the simple wear and tear. Why does it the wear and tear? Because you throw it, you take it, you know. Because what's your intention? In 2 years, I'm going to get a new one. So what's the difference? Anyway, I got to get a new suit and all that. For a man to wear the same coat 50 years, it shows you how meticulous he was in preserving it. It's not Lignai. His wife was saying it in the Sheva. And it's not only that he wasn't into the Gashmiu. That's a different praise. The praise is he respected the assets. And that's the lesson. Al Tashchet. Be a little more, cautious. But again, we're in the throwaway society. So the throwaway society says, you know, once it breaks, and a lot of times it's true, it doesn't pay to fix it, it's easy to throw it out and buy a new one. So that already just gives us a whole You know, and then the attitude trickles down to just that we have no respect for any of the possessions that we have. No respect for anything to preserve and to keep them. To teach the kids that. Kid takes out the milk from the refrigerator. So you come down in the morning, you see the milk still on the table. To tell the kids, Al Tashrit. What'd you do? You left the milk out because you're lazy. You don't want to put it back in the refrigerator. That's Al Tashrit. What do? You spoil the whole milk over there. So you have to give them it's a musaf. So I'll tell you one last thought. We'll close over here. You never get to finish the chapters, but as we start them, Meir Gomer Alay. I saw a beautiful thought. So one of the great rabbis, he asked his, and you'll hear the reason why I'm telling it to you. He asked one of the little boys in the yeshiva, do you learn Chumash with Rashi? So he says, of course, I learn Chumash Rashi. So he says, did you learn this Rashi? I learned it. Could you read it for me, please? Of course I can read it for you. The Rashi was this week's parasha that talks about, it says, Vaya'an Lavan uftu'el. So it says, Lavan answered in front of his father. Huh? Right. So Rashi says, Rasha'aya. Very good. He answered in front of his father. Yeah. So the kid reads it. So the rabbi says, the great rabbi says, that's how your rabbi taught you this Rashi? He says, yeah, read it again, please. Rasha'aya. He was Rasha. Shekafas lefnei aviv, because he spoke in front of his father. You sure this is the way the rabbi taught you this Rashi? This is not the Pshat HaNashi. Who's your Rebbe? Goes to the Rebbe. You tell the Rebbe, he says, you teach the Nashi? Yes. Could you please tell me how you taught this Rashi? Rasha Haya. He was a Rasha. Shekafas lefnei, he spoke in front of his father. He says, that's not the Pshat, you corrupted the whole Nashi. I says, what are you talking? He says, now I'm going to show you how you learned the Rashi. Bayan Lavan Uptuel. Rasha'aya! Shekafas lifnei aviv! This man was a Rasha! He spoke in front of his father! That's the way you teach it to the students. That when they hear the Rashi, not you read a Kaj, hey, he was a Rasha, he spoke in front of his father. Hey, okay, yeah, he did it. The impression that you make on the child when he reads his Rashi, you have to shake. Rasha! A man speaks in front of a father. So the kid will say, wow, okay, that's best bad. It's a bad idea. You don't read this Rashi like you're reading a menu in a restaurant. You have to read it with the drama behind it. Otherwise, it doesn't go into the kid's heart. I have to read it with the right notation. So the same thing, you know, whenever we give musar to our children, it's not only the musar that you're giving. I'm not saying you have to scream on top of your lungs either, but our children are very wise. They see if the musar that we're giving them is just a textbook musar that, you know, as a father you have to give musar, don't do that. So it's like a perfunctory act where the kid knows, okay, he's a father, he has to give musar. He doesn't mean it. He's really not upset, but it just alleviates his conscience. He has to say that, okay, son, don't do that anymore. Or the son sees the reaction of the father. Why? He's upset. He's not the son does something wrong, the child does something wrong. And besides the musar, there has to be the... I don't say the drama, because it shouldn't be drama. It has to be real. The feeling, but then already the child remembers his father or his mother's face at the time that she gave the, wow, she was angry, this is not a good thing. That's what they're going to remember, the feeling behind it. So we talk about these items as well. Tonight we're talking about Bal Tashrit. You know, we have to be a little more careful with the possessions and all that over there, and spoiling our children. You know, the thing rips, I told her, hey, now you're not getting a dress for the next thing. You don't just waste things, you don't just do things over like this. You're training them, you're teaching them that when they're old also, that they'll be a little more cautious. That's the subject. You know, so we should be zocher. David HaMelech Alam HaShalom Zechutu Yagen Aleinu B'zat HaShem Zechut Avivaris Teilim, all these good midot we should have easier chance to acquire them because we mention them, and Be'ez Hashem also that we'll be a little more careful in our possessions, and Borei Olam will give us Beracha as well. Because if you say Kol Mebazet HaBegadim, the opposite is also true. Kol Mechabedet HaBegadim, Kol Mechabedet HaNechasim, then already the Nechasim become more plentiful and more in abundance. Shavua Tov Baruch. Baruch Adonai Avraham.